Welcome to Unconditional, everyone. I am your host, Julia Jones, and this is an advice podcast every Friday to offer compassion and understanding about the painful places we've been, all because of the love we crave from our Father in Heaven and what we can do to help feel His love. To start off, let's ask a question of ourselves. What do you think is happening when we can't, quote, hear, unquote, God's voice? In the times in my life that I haven't been able to hear God's voice, I've asked these questions. Is God ignoring me? Have I done something wrong to deserve this silence? Or maybe even, is God trying to give me room to figure this out for myself? It can be easy to begin doubting our place with God while He's markedly silent towards us. And that is what I want to discuss in depth today. There is an answer I got when I posed this question on my website that I want to talk about today. When I asked that specific question, what do you think is happening when we can't, air quote, hear God's voice? My response from one listener was, quote, we aren't communicating with Him through prayer and staying in tune with Him. Prayer is corresponding with Him, then listening for His answers, unquote. I really appreciated that response because that is a very, very common response, and that is where we go oftentimes when we think that, when we see that God is more silent than usual with us. We tend to wonder what's going on our side. In order to be in touch with God, we must be willing to quiet our minds and ask questions. The easiest to have answers, in my experience, have been yes or no questions. We must also be willing to follow the guidance given. These are very important aspects of a very nuanced relationship with God. But what if we're doing all the right things to the best of our ability? What if we are quiet as often as we have available time, and a heart that is willing to move forward with the direction we're given, and yet we're still experiencing silence from heaven? What is happening on God's side and our side in that case? I've been pondering this question this week, and in searching for an experience that illustrates this, I keep coming back to one of the most difficult things that I've had to deal with in my life. When my husband Ryan and I were married for roughly a year, I went to my father, who was ordained as a high priest in my church, for a laying on of hands blessing, which is a prayer uttered with his hands on my head. His job then as a blesser is to listen for what the Holy Spirit tells him to say and keep it to only that. He's supposed to keep his words confined to what the Spirit tells him to say. In my faith, those blessings are regarded as personal scripture to each blessee. So it came to him after learning from my heart transplant team that the 80% of kidney and heart transplant recipients, that's people who've had both at once or at different times, those people gave birth naturally, and their children were relatively healthy, even though they were born 2 months premature and needed time in the incubator to continue developing their vision and their lungs. Well, I thought I might be able to manage a pregnancy if I were just a heart transplant patient and I hadn't needed to have a kidney transplant also. I also didn't have hypertension or stroke or had had rejection in the past or diabetes. Many of these are the things that can make pregnancy so much more dangerous. And that was pretty common in the 80% of women who did have healthy babies vaginally. So I had these medical findings that I showed to my husband, and we were trying to understand the risk and the facts and weigh them about a transplant patient getting pregnant. And I had the example of a sister who had been able to afford a set of twins through surrogacy and a brother who had been able to adopt three children through the foster system. So I had all these different versions of creating a family before me, and I didn't know which direction to go. So I sat down in a chair while Dad stood over me with his hands on my head, and he began. He blessed me that there were children all around the world who needed the love I could give. Then he blessed me that whatever direction Ryan and I chose to take, God would open the doors in our way. After about a year of deliberating with my husband, we came to the conclusion that pregnancy would make taking my medications extremely difficult during the morning sickness phase. And also, in the worst case, I could be leaving Ryan wifeless with a brand new baby. The point of me having a baby was to be there to raise it. So I felt pregnancy was still more risk than I wanted for our family. Then we looked into foster care, but after the training classes, Ryan felt like we'd be enabling a broken system that put children at serious risk while having our hands tied to do anything to protect them. So we knew that fostering wasn't right for us either. After looking at adoption.org and reading the about section regarding the birth mothers, I read that the general pool of children have had exposure to drugs and alcohol like foster kids have, but that the structure of adoption was such that we'd be paying $40,000 or more for that child, and still we could be scammed out of all of it. It seemed the only reasonable option left was surrogacy. Most companies charge about $100,000 or so for all-inclusive services of finding the surrogate for me, the egg, sperm retrieval, and fertilization, as well as the implantation into the surrogate mother. We were able to find a fertility center that charged only for the medical procedures and the freezing. So we thought maybe this might be our direction. So we set about paying off as much debt as we could. In 2 years, we paid off remaining debt from our wedding and saved enough to buy ourselves a house. While we did this, we ate rice and beans and potatoes while we began paying down Ryan's school loans and paying our $6,000 health insurance deductible each year. Then Ryan got a job, which offered reimbursement for retrieval, so we were able to get the process started. Meanwhile, I began talking with the fertility center, who had a running list of people who'd walked in and offered to be someone's surrogate. I began calling these women to chit-chat and see if any of them were a good fit for us. I'd invite them to dinner with Ryan and I, and all would seem well until it came to talk of the money. Most were unwilling to move forward without drawing up a contract for $70,000 to $75,000, paid in full by the birth of the baby. I was not finding any who would ever be willing to do surrogacy for even $30,000. 6 more years go by, and after each potential surrogate dropped out, it would take me 6 to 8 months or so to recover from continually dashed hopes. Then a week after learning a potential surrogate was not approved by the fertility center, I was given the phone number of a woman who was. I spoke with her and her husband. The four of us felt like instant friends over the phone, so we met for lunch and finalized a partnership a few months later on paper. She began treatments, and I began getting the bills for each of them. Just before Christmas, we got a call from our fertility center coordinator that we were expecting, and she then told us when to expect the next appointment. The baby lasted long enough for us to know it was a boy, but at the 16-week exam, we couldn't find a heartbeat. I can remember that day vividly. Together, the two of us sat in the doctor's corner office crying and hugging each other and my surrogate and her husband. Then we each went home to try and pick up the pieces somehow. I could not understand it. We had made a choice. And it was a smart choice. It was a choice that we both loved. We both saw a way through to make it happen safely. We both had found somebody who was making it financially affordable for us. And somehow the baby died. They told us later that they didn't see it coming, that the embryo was healthy, but that for some reason he died anyway. And I think I began to snap. We'd been waiting 8 long years, and we'd spent a lot of money getting to this point. Money that I didn't foresee ever having again, because we'd saved and saved and saved, and it was hard putting up that money to begin with. I didn't see a way to do it again. And to be honest, the very next day, I went to a dark place. I couldn't do much that day. Besides, I think I watched TV just to numb my brain. And in moments when I was thinking for too long, I wondered if I could step in the middle of traffic and just go to heaven so I could raise my son. And I knew it was a dark place, but I didn't know what life was for without having a child in it. I cried nearly every day in my prayers because I felt so abandoned. When I saw someone else's happiness, it felt like a jackknife inside me. I became infatuated with Thomas Hardy books for how deeply dark they were, because I felt like this life was just pain. Like, where was the happiness? When I'd hear sermons that God answered prayers, it also felt like a jagged knife inside me, because other people who I thought were as good as I was were getting kids left and right. Mother's Day, I was completely vacant inside. Sermons about how our lives are better if we're more grateful in our trials made me want to puke. When someone asked how I was, I hated lying and saying I was good, because I knew if I said I was depressed, the conversation would run far longer than the other person was ready for, or sometimes emotionally capable of mirroring. People that smiled hurt to look at. When I prayed to God, I would inevitably start crying because I felt so hurt and like it was his fault. Like he could have saved my son, given me my son back, if he'd only wanted to. When my husband, who was also a priest, would give me a laying on of hands blessing, most of the time, the blessing said that God was weeping with me. And I remember I would jot down the words of the blessing as soon as he finished, just to see if I could remember it all. And on this particular day, I was still so angry that even after writing all the things down that Ryan had heard through inspiration, I was still so angry at God's response that was mostly comforting and mostly meant to comfort. All I wanted to do was crumple it up and chuck it across the room. I was so angry still. Every day It felt like that blessing I had from my dad was a lie. And I didn't know how to reconcile that with the God I knew, a God that had paid attention to me and guided me along and saved my life. So many things that happened when I was a child, needing a transplant, that solidified my faith in God and my belief that he really valued who I was, and I didn't ever have to deserve his love. It was just there. Suddenly, I did question that because I had been doing everything I possibly could. And somehow, my blessing was still not realized. 8 years later. Well, now it's past 10 years later. And we're nowhere closer to having our own children. And all this time, I've just wondered, was that blessing a lie? Is the blessing still going to be fulfilled? What can I make of it? What is the point of the blessing? How do I find meaning in my life as it is? Sometimes I have to really ask myself, what would I have done if God had told me exactly why Oliver died? What if he'd said, Oliver died because you still need to learn something? I doubt I would be happy with that response. I believe I would, again, chuck the piece of paper against the wall and say, that's a crap answer. What else do I need to learn? I mean, there's lots of people with children on the earth. How am I not good enough? I read a near-death experience book at one point that said that the children that we miscarry were the type of children who would have had more trials than a human could bear. And so a miscarriage or a stillbirth is God's way of showing mercy to that child and offering them a way to be part of Earth without having to go through all the things they were willing to go through. And that's the only idea that I can wrap my mind around. That my boy would have taken on problems on this earth life that would have been too heavy for a person to bear. And so God took him back to heaven early. That's the only answer that seems to make sense to me. And so that's the one I've held on to. It was terribly hard in those first 2 years to have any joy in anything. I felt so numb, so much anger was just on the surface, you know, like just within reach. If something happened that day, it could set me off and I could just be spitting mad. Or the other way, I could just be despondent and I couldn't be retrieved. I do believe that that had an effect on how much I was listening when I prayed. As much as I would like to say that I was perfectly attuned to God, I was quite angry with him. And when we're angry, we're not really listening, are we? I felt like my anger was justified, and I did learn something really cool, though. So I'd spent 2 years being angry, and 2 years when I prayed, I was either crying or I was shouting in my car. It ain't pretty, but that's how it was. I do think that when I was in that state, it was God's answers to me. Since God talks quietly and with love and peace, we have to be in a place where we can receive love and peace to be able to feel it or hear it. And I wasn't. So I cannot say in good faith that I was perfectly aligned with God and ready to hear, but I really was trying to the best of my ability. And I think the fact that I was trying my hardest will count for me for good. That we don't get docked points for diminished capacity due to various things, due to circumstances, due to our brain chemistry. I don't think we get docked for things that are beyond our control. And so when I meet God again, I believe that I will be considered for what I was trying to do. I was trying to stay in tune the whole time. I do think that God sent me foster children in 2020 to bring me out of that funk. I don't know if it was depression for real or not. Sure felt like it. And some people were telling me that, you know, maybe I needed to go get some medicine. Ryan in particular. I can remember back in 2018, the same year as when we lost him, I was trying to reach out to a child in my faith who I saw as defiant and angry, and I wanted to know how best to love that child. And I woke up one night. Actually, by then it was morning. It was like 4 or 5 in the morning. I woke up and I felt my answer about this child was, whenever you've yelled at me, I haven't been angry in return at you. Because I love you. Our anger is an emotion. It's not a sin. And that was what kept me holding on. Because God isn't the type of creator who puts us on a flawed earth where we become flawed and then thinks of us badly for that flaw or series of them. He knows what he's done in putting us on this earth, and he cherishes us anyway. A little bit later, I had another blessing from my husband this time. And the blessing said, it's okay that you feel so much rage. I'm right here. And I'm crying with you. I want each of you to know that God is standing with us in our pain. He doesn't tower over us telling us we are sinners. He's always ready to stand at our side. I doubt at this point that I will ever have my own children. But what I do know is that I have been blessed with the gift of empathy, and many of my experiences have been inspiration for helping others heal and draw closer to God. Even though I do not know why God literally closed the door on our little boy and why all other avenues of having a family are gone. I still know that he must have done it for some good purpose. Maybe it was so that I could do this podcast and be right there in the center of the pain for those listeners out there who are suffering also. This may sound like an odd thing to say, but I know that God is not a narcissist. He doesn't profit from our pain. He doesn't do things to bring himself glory. His only ever motivation is service to us. And this I know. When I get on the other side, I'm going to hug my boy and I'm going to ask what it was all about. And I'll have my answer. And whatever it is, I'm going to understand. It's all going to click into place and I will realize, oh, well, okay then. That's why. And my mind will be at rest. If you are in a place where you feel a lot more anger than usual, and you also feel like God is being silent to you, keep doing the things that keep you close to God, whatever that is. Because eventually you will feel him again. I know this because he's there for me and he's there for you. Keep taking those quiet moments. Keep seeking the Lord and you will hear his voice. Thank you for listening to Unconditional. Remember to write a review on Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find my show. Stay in it. Keep listening. Keep seeking. He will speak to you somehow, someday. Until then, know that I love you and send all my best energies your way.